Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. I am your host, Martha Reddick, and this week we are going to be talking Montessori. And to do that, I have brought on Tiffany Otwell. Hello, Tiffany.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's so nice to have you here. I'm very excited to talk about this with you. Before we talk specifically about the wonderful world of Montessori, can I hear a little bit about your background?
Sure. I've been around Montessori my entire life. My mom put me in a Montessori school when I was just under 3 years of age. I attended that school through kindergarten, and then they had an attached grade school that was part Montessori, part traditional, mm-hmm. where they blended the philosophies, and I did that through sixth grade. Sometime in there, my mom was so impressed with Montessori, she went and got her Montessori credentials and became a Montessori teacher. And then throughout the rest of my academic career, I always lovingly looked back on my time at Montessori school and didn't understand why the rest of academia wasn't that way. Mm-hmm. So once I graduated and had gotten my undergrad in television and film and did work in LA and all of that, I decided I wanted to settle down and go back to teaching and really explore that. So I went back to the same school where I went to school as a little child, and the same teacher that was my Montessori teacher when I was in an early childhood classroom, they had started a training center. And she was my teacher again. And I went through a program to become a Montessori credential teacher.
Wow, that's awesome. I also attended a Montessori school. So I just went for middle school, which is kind of an odd time.
That's wonderful. That's very interesting time to do Montessori, isn't it? Did you do a lot of open-ended large projects where you combined all the different philosophies together? As far as like study of dinosaurs, where you added in measurements and history and
in fact one semester or 6 week period, we decided as a class that we wanted, or as a middle school, so sixth through eighth grade, that we wanted to build a volleyball court. And so that was kind of our entire, that was the basis, the foundation for our study. So for science, we looked at, you know, how deep, how much sand we would need, where would be the best place to put it on the property. We tested dirt, all that good stuff. For math, obviously measurements and how many bags of sand to buy and how tall it needed to be. And for history, we researched volleyball. and the history of that. I think we also did like a little bit of local history just to kind of mix that in too. But and then my group, because we all kind of had specialized tasks, was the we were the historians of the project. So we filmed and kept records of all of the things that we were doing. And then we wrote a big paper about it all.
So that's wonderful.
Yeah, it was really neat.
And obviously something that you carry with you that made a big impression, right?
It really did. It really did. And the other thing that I will say about going to middle school for Montessori is that the way that my school worked is we worked our way up to getting 6 weeks worth of work at a time. So we would have packets that had different choices of projects and things like that. And it was all this point system. And you had to have a certain number of points in every subject. And so some projects would count towards multiple subjects, would be like 3 points towards science and 4 points towards math. And so you could figure out exactly how you wanted to do it all. But in doing that and getting 6 weeks worth of work and laying out a game plan for myself and then really being held accountable, because if you hadn't done anything all semester, you didn't get to go on any of the fun days, because at the end we had like a volunteer day where we would go out in the community and volunteer. And then the next day we had a just kind of fun, like laser tag or something like that, group activity for anyone that was done with their work. And that really worked well for me. And I don't procrastinate as much as my other friends because of that. I still procrastinate sometimes on things that I don't want to do. Taxes. We're recording on the day taxes are due. And that I definitely did leave. They're done now, but I definitely didn't leave them, you know, January 31st when I had all the stuff. But I, in life in general, I am much less likely to procrastinate, I find, than my other friends. And I do think that has a lot to do with my time in Montessori.
Yeah, when you're self-monitoring and self-constructing, it means so much more than just someone telling you what to do every step of the way. Mm-hmm. It's something that I'm very passionate about with my own children as well. I want them to make choices and make their decisions because it's what they should do or it's the right thing to do, not because I'm telling them they have to or they are going to be in trouble or they won't get something if they don't.
Right.
With that comes a lot of tempering of your own self, though. Because out in the world, then, my children will say, well, this is my choice. Or they don't have the same limits. We have a shelf and a cabinet where it just has the things that they can go and get. So they don't have to ask for a snack. It's all there and it's all appropriate things that they can have so they can self-construct that. That might mean that they're not hungry at dinner time. I know that they ate good food. That doesn't bother me, but there are people in the world where that is off-putting to them because I'm not the main authority in those parts of their life.
Right.
They still listen to me. They still respect me. I don't think it shouldn't be about power and about because I said so. It should be about them growing to make appropriate choices that can assist them in adulthood and life.
Right. And yeah, if you ended up, you know, making one of their favorite dinners and they had snacked, the natural consequences of that would be that they might not be very hungry for that, you know, favorite dinner and realize that they maybe missed out on that. Right. I love natural consequences.
than just authoritarian, random abstract things of an hour.
I said so.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I completely agree. That's very much my nanny philosophy too. But it can be hard if the parents that I'm nannying for, you know, I certainly adapt my nanny style and philosophy I adapt my style to work within the family that I'm nannying for. And all of them are wonderful parents. I really have never nannied for a family that I didn't fully respect their parenting style. And so, but sometimes I do, you know, eating dinner together is important to them. So we do have to do the snacks a little differently or things like that. But I do in my nanny day really try to encourage autonomy and choice and self-advocacy and all that good stuff to avoid those power struggles. Because it does, it just ends up in, because I said so, it's just going to be a power struggle.
Right.
So I completely agree. Well, let's talk about specifically Montessori. So for anyone listening who doesn't know what Montessori is, can you kind of give us an overview of what Montessori is?
Sure. Montessori is a lot of things to a lot of people.
Right.
but when you boil it down, it is a philosophy of education that was inspired and laid out by Maria Montessori in the early 1900s. She was an amazing woman. She was one of the first Italian doctors, female Italian doctors. Mm-hmm. She was a scientist. She was an advocate for children. And putting all of those things together, she approached working with children from a very scientific standpoint of observing, implementing, and then gathering the data to decide what she thought was best fulfilling their needs.
Hmm.
The measurements that she used were, were the children happy? Did the children seem whole? Were they calm? Were they engrossed? Was their concentration deep? Through her studies and through the education she laid out, we now have found that there are many wonderful academic side effects of that, but that was never her intent. Her intent was to help children find their true self and take away the different obstacles that kept them from having that intense focus, that intense concentration, and that ability to listen to their own inner driving. She called it the spiritual embryo.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt that everyone was born within them to self-construct and to follow their own path. And we just need to get out of our way, get out of their way, and let that happen through the appropriate developmental environment.
That's beautiful. I even attended a Montessori school, and I didn't know all that. So that's very helpful. And I also, as you were talking, I was thinking about how important listening to ourselves is, and I think it's especially important for children and as they become adults in this age of advertising. And really, you can't escape advertising in our world right now. But seeing an advertisement and asking yourself, you know, what, like, do I need that? And really, the definition of need. And checking in with yourself before letting it override your critical thinking, I think is very important. And I don't think that all of our education is set up to do that, to help us override that initial, like, oh, I want it. I want that now.
Sure. That's something, yeah, our society. We've kind of become an instant gratification society.
Yeah.
So having to combat that, obviously that wasn't something that was as big of a deal back then. I think that's why Montessori has evolved in different ways. There are people that think it is a child-led philosophy. And that's true, it is. And follow the child was a very big mantra of hers. Mm-hmm. But that has to come within limits. If you purely just follow the child's wants and each whim, they're not stopping to find that inner self. They're becoming victims of the advertising or of the society that we're in, where it's want, 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 need, 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 which really isn't a need.
Right.
so it's tempering that with the freedom of the limits and teaching them the different things that are expected at different times.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So what ages do best with Montessori education?
Well, I think that's a tricky question.
Yeah.
The absorbent mind stage, the unconscious portion of it was 0 to 3. And that's where she laid out, this is the time where children are just absorbing everything around them. Their mind is like a sponge. They are passively taking in everything around them. That's why it's so important when you're dealing with infants and toddlers to have things simplistic and slow and giving them those words. When we work with the toddler classroom, you don't need to explain all the whys to them. We use mm-hmm. very simple speech with them. We use gentle hands.
Mm-hmm.
We are kind to our friends. We don't need to go into a whole diatribe of, when you do this, it hits them, that hurts, and in that rapid fire speech. Just like when I speak really fast, adults can't understand it. The child certainly can't absorb all of that. So that's a very important age for the Montessori child.
Yes.
When you get to the 3 to 6 early childhood age, they are becoming conscious absorption at that point. The absorbent mind is still at play. They're still in a sensitive period for language, and the environment still plays a huge part, but they are becoming better at constructing it. That's where most of her focus was. But again, the tools, just like you said with your middle school, the tools that you lay out and that philosophy is something that can work for everyone. My husband makes fun of me all the time because we'll be talking and I'll give him a yes, yes choice, or I'll do something and he'll say, you're Montessori-ing me.
So yes.
Most commonly we see early childhood, and now we're starting to see more of infants and toddlers as we have a larger workforce in play.
Right.
But what's best? It's hard to say. It's whatever is with that person, or if possible, living with those kind of things for your whole life is a wonderful way to be.
Yes, I completely agree. But it is encouraging, I think, that the ages that nannies mostly work with are that 0 to 6. So I think that this is a very good thing to learn about as a nanny. Not necessarily that you would create a Montessori classroom in a home, but that you could use some of these techniques and philosophies in your nanny day.
You definitely can. And with nannies, you are already getting that experience of you're being with them for year after year after year. Nannies tend to be more predisposed to take to Montessori than random childcare workers. When I first opened my school, I did most of my hiring through care.com and different nanny sites.
Oh, wow.
They really were just better equipped for understanding working with a child for many years. One of my really good friends is a Montessori teacher, and she left the classroom to be a Montessori nanny.
Oh, wow.
And she loves it because there are things that when you scale up, you can't do as well. When you're nannying, you can plan and have the time, and if that child's able to put their own shoes on, but it takes a half an hour, you can put that in your day.
Mm-hmm.
That's much tougher to do within the confines of a childcare setting when we're dealing with ratios and other state regulations and things like that.
Very true.
So yeah, Montessori nannying is a wonderful time to put practice into Montessori philosophies.
Yes. So when you opened your school, what does a school have to do to call itself a Montessori school?
Sadly, nothing.
Okay.
It's really sad. Anyone can call themselves a Montessori school, which is really important for parents to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need to have enough knowledge to find an actual authentic Montessori school that fits with their needs.
Right.
There are some governing bodies. So the two main philosophies of Montessori that most people recognize as the main two are AMI, which is the Association of Montessori International. That is still run by Mario Montessori, Maria's son.
Sorry.
It's okay. And then AMS is the American Montessori Society. Those are the two big ones.
Okay.
There are other ones that now filter in. Usually, if a school is prescribing to one of those philosophies, they're going to put that out there loud and proud. If you don't see that when you're looking at a school, you would want to go the next step and ask about their teacher training programs and where they send them. It's going to sound like a lot of just gobbledygook because usually they're just acronyms like ADMTEI and NAMC. And what you want to find out is that a training program MACTI accredited, which is the Montessori Association for Credentials of Teacher Education.
Okay.
That's really important. If you're looking at someplace that is an AMI or AMS school, and they are an AMS full member school, like mine is, or an AMI recognized school, that means that all of their lead teachers have gone to these approved training centers somewhere in the country where they have spent a year to 2 years really delving into Montessori, the philosophy, creating their manuals, and have had hands-on experience with different mentors that then come out and check them in their environment, go back and forth. It's a very extensive process.
Wow.
But again, people have to know that to know that that's important.
Right.
Otherwise, they just see Montessori and yeah, and the name's not trademarked. Anyone can call themselves that.
Okay. That's very good to know. Yes, I think that that's very important to know. For any parents that are listening or nannies that the parents are looking at schools, I think taking this knowledge to them would be a great thing to do if they're looking at a school that's saying it's Montessori. Tell them some of the questions to ask. That's great. So how can nannies and parents use some of these Montessori techniques in their own home? We talked a little bit about, you know, allowing 30 minutes to put on shoes if that's where that child is. But what are some other ways?
A big part of the Montessori philosophy is control of error. Mm-hmm. So when looking at a task, if a child wants to help, let's say it's feeding themselves. That's the practical life is a large part of the early childhood classroom, the toddler classrooms. A child can definitely make their own bowl of cereal.
Right.
But you can't give them the box and the jug of milk. You're going to want to control the air by giving them a small container that they can pour into the bowl of the cereal, a small container of milk that they can pour into the bowl. And so you're setting up Montessori works for them at home, where if they do spill, it's manageable for them to clean up.
Right.
When you're talking to the children, we're trying to remove ourselves. So instead of saying things like, I need you to, you would just put the onus on them. You need to go get ready to leave. Mm-hmm. You need to go to the bathroom before we go outside. Offering them yes, yes choices. If they don't want to put their shoes in, we're going outside. You have to have something on your feet. Would you like to wear your shoes or your boots? So mm-hmm. they're still having control, but it's, again, things that everyone wins.
Right.
When I tell them what to do instead of what not to do. So mm-hmm. instead of saying, don't scream in the house, you say, we use low voices in the house. We can scream outside. So you're also telling them the appropriate place they can do those things.
Mm-hmm.
Another technique you can do is, or to think about, is when you're asking them something, try not to make it open-ended, because if the answer is no, Montessorians respect that no.
Right.
And that might not be what you wanted to do. So what we do at our school is take that, make a mental note, I should have asked that differently, and give it a few minutes. Mm-hmm. I've given you a few minutes, now it's time for us to do this and carry on. Also, we use the Chick Mormon philosophy of praise, which is, I believe, catching on more and more in Montessori circles. Whereas when I grew up, and I'm guessing maybe you as well, mm-hmm. praise was a big deal. So right. I got a lot of good jobs and excellent and wows and terrifics. Nowadays, they found that those evaluative types of praise tend to make someone want more of that. And it's mm-hmm. all external. So we eliminate that and we work on descriptive and appreciative praise. So if someone says, do you like my drawing? I see you filled the whole paper. you worked really hard on that. I see it made you happy. So you are just reflecting back to them to try to give them their own sense of pride and acknowledge and know what that feels like. Also, and then with the appreciative, you held the door. Thank you. That is so kind. Friends help each other. Again, so you're telling them social mores, things that are wonderful for them to do, and then letting them reflect on it themselves instead of making you the ultimate evaluator that they need to please.
Yes. Love that. Yeah. And this is, as I'm hearing you talk about this, if you're listening and you want another episode that also talks about kind of the same philosophies, just in a different way, power tools for power struggles, or preventing power struggles with kids. I'm not quite sure what I titled the episode, but it's way back. I think it's like number 56. That is a good episode that has a lot of these ideas as well. But I love all of those, and I certainly have seen the benefit in my nannying by using them instead of saying just a good job, because when you hear good job, it doesn't tell you anything about how or what you did that was good. And then also that layer of then I, as the nanny, am holding all of the power, and I don't want that.
Right.
So yes, that idea of not being the ultimate evaluator, I think is very important for any caregiver for children. I also find that because I've nannied for children that have attended a Montessori school before, and I remember at their birthday party one year, they about half of the kids there were Montessori kids from their school, and then half of the kids were kids that they knew from other areas of their life. And so at this birthday party, when it was time for cake, it was fascinating because all of the Montessori kids got their own plates and their own utensils and sat down and ate, you know, their slice of cake. And then when it was done, they all cleaned up after themselves and pushed their chair in. And it was just in such stark contrast to these other kids that haven't experienced that.
I'm sorry. Excuse
oh,
me.
No worries.
I have a 4-year-old who just came into their room, almost 4.
Oh, hi.
Oh, sweet Papa, okay. Here. I'm sorry about that.
No worries. I loved it.
My mom had knee surgery, and we're at my parents' house for Easter, and it makes it a little tricky because I'm trying to do more for her. But
right. But yes, kids also want and need you.
Yeah, and they're a little out of their element, so that's always fun.
But yeah, it was so interesting to see the difference between kids that had been in a Montessori environment and knew and wanted to do these things for themselves versus kids that I don't think had been given that option or set up for success in the same way to do those type of chores, because they all, you know, just left their plates and their chairs were all willy-nilly and they went back to the jump house, you know, and so it was interesting to watch that at that birthday party.
Right. And as the children grow, sometimes it's on us as caregivers to be able to see those signs that, mm-hmm. oh, they're ready for this. Like, right. And then allow yourself to step back and let them or start setting them up for that success.
Yes.
Very easy as a parent or a caregiver to just get in the role of, yes, I always tie their shoes. Yes, I always do this. But they're growing up too, and we don't have to. And when we see they're ready and they're asking to help or they're showing us, we need to let them.
Yes. And I also find as a nanny, sometimes, you know, it's quote unquote easier to just make their lunch myself. But as a nanny, one of the beautiful things about our job is that we have the time. You know, we can rearrange and not go to the park at 1:15 when we had planned. We can go at 1:30. That's okay. To take that extra 15 minutes to let them help build their own sandwich or do whatever. And we have, there's an episode about cooking with kids that I think is good to listen to, but it's just allowing them to help you with those chores is, I think, really crucial. I started some of my nanny kids folding their own laundry when he was 2.5. And, you know, I started him with, can you find the matching pairs of socks? But right. He loved it. And so just thinking of ways that you can encourage, one of my nanny kids right now, she's only 15 months old, and she loves helping her mom get things out of the washing machine and put them into the dryer. Aww. You know, and I see her light up with joy when her mom says, do you want to help with this? And she, you know, toddles in there and helps. And it's amazing.
She could probably start sorting darks and lights too, if they're a family that sorts clothes.
I think she could. I think she definitely could.
Feeding with young toddlers is always one that we struggle with new employees. Mm-hmm. Is them, they're always so worried that a young child of that age is going to starve if we let them do it themselves.
And they won't.
They won't at all. And they're going to miss their mouth and they're going to get messy. And that's okay. Part of what they need to do is they're using their senses to explore the world.
Right.
If we rob them of that, again, they're not able to self-construct and learn that.
Yes.
I gave my children spoons as soon as they could pretty much sit up, and they would just make a mess and then we'd wipe it off. Mm-hmm. If people are worried about stains, you can take the toddler's shirt off and let them eat with on a shirt. They'll like it more. They can feel it on their skin and then they get an extra sensory experience. So they think it's great fun and it just saves you laundry.
Yes. And then bath time, that's fun too. If they get, you know, wild and crazy enough to need to just go hop in the bath, that's also fun.
It is there. Yeah. Again, we have our schools very, very, our playground is in the woods. That's just dirt and they get messy and they get dirty and they're just covered in little dust everywhere most days. And it often turns off parents that come to tour because, they're going to be so messy. But I really appreciate it. They need that time. Nature and being outside is so important to children.
So important. And
I don't have, by the time I get home at night, it's 6 at night. And I don't want to, I have to make dinner and do these things. I don't have the time to go outside with the girls. And we have our house is kind of close to a street. So if we didn't have that time at school, they wouldn't get it. I think it's important for everyone, even if they don't like being outside, to give them that time when they're nannying or find a school that does it if you can't. Mm-hmm. Anything to make sure they get outside and experience nature and really get to explore it and touch it and get their hands dirty.
Yes, I completely agree. We've been trying to do a lot more time outside, although Chicago has not been playing very nice. It snowed here yesterday, so there's that. Although going out in the snow is also very fun. I think it's important to teach that we can go out in any weather. We just need to prepare differently.
Right.
Although the polar vortex is slightly different, and we talked about that too when I was with older kids. I was like, I know that I say we can go out in any weather, but it's -50 degrees, so we're not going to go out in this. But yes, I completely agree. And there's a lot of science behind kids that spend time outside get sick less frequently. And like literally dirt on your feet helps your body like regulate itself better. And so I completely agree that allowing for that time outside is so important.
Montessori was a big advocate of nature and nature studies as well.
Yes. Love it. And then back to mealtimes quickly. So one thing that I think is, at least, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but is allowing children to work with breakable things. Mm-hmm. And so I know for one of my kiddos, they have started letting her drink out of a shot glass because she's a baby. And so, but it's a, you know, it's a glass shot glass, and they talk to her about how it's breakable and you can't throw it on the floor, and we're all careful with it and modeling that to her. But we do let her drink out of this shot glass, and she loves it. She like lights up when we bring it out because she feels, at least my interpretation of her facial expressions is that she feels very proud when she handles, you know, this heavy glass all by herself and gets water from it. You know, she doesn't always, but a lot of the times she's able to drink out of it. And it's really something to watch.
It is. It's wonderful. The same with silverware. They don't need those plastic things. There are smaller size, appropriate size metal that you can get.
Right.
That they're emulating. They're using what they see, and it's real. It's heavy. It is special. Like you were saying, it can break. If we want children to be aware and take, care of things, they have to know that it can also break.
That's
the cause and effect. And my daughter has, she likes to drink coffee, which is really hot chocolate with some creamer in it.
Mm-hmm.
But she got this Cheetah mug, and she loves it so very much, and she carries it all around. And we've talked about a lot that if she doesn't have two hands, it can slip. It slipped, it cracked. Mm-hmm. And it was a very sad day for her. Mm-hmm. But now, whenever she handles something, she always goes back to that. It was a natural consequence. She learned. It actually only had a little mark on it, so she can still use it.
Oh,
but
good.
She learned the lesson.
Right.
And I don't think that would be the same kind of care if it was plastic and there were no consequences if anything happened to it.
I completely agree. And yeah, and I think looking for those opportunities, and I know as nannies, our day can feel very full, but I really encourage you to look for opportunities to incorporate the child that you're watching or children doing more in their world instead of just doing it for them. And it takes a lot of mind energy to do that. And it could take, you know, a big chunk out of your day cleaning up after a lot of these things that we've talked about. But I think that the rewards from that are well worth the time, the risk of the time or energy it would take from you.
And sometimes you just need to stick with it. As far as like eating goes and different ways you can incorporate that, having them help with food prep always gets children more interested in than eating it. Mm-hmm. But also the choices that you offer. A lot of our children in the world get a lot of sugar, a lot of processed things. So if during your nannying time, that's not an option and their choices are, here are your three choices. They're these fruits, they're these vegetables. That's what you can eat. They might not want it at mealtime, but if it's still available to them another hour later, when they're really hungry, they're more up to try it as well. It's kind of sticking with it and not fearing that they're going to starve. They will come around. If you expect that that's what they're going to eat when you're around them, ultimately they will. It just might take some time and several offerings.
Yes. Yes. And yeah, I think that's a very important reminder to not just back down immediately. If a kid doesn't take a snack, that's okay. It's their body. They're right. In charge of what goes into it. That good old division of responsibility, is super important. So, yes, I love that. Do you have any other advice on how nannies and parents can use Montessori techniques with chores and helping out around the house, kind of building that community?
Well, I think allowing children to do chores and participate as young as they are able is a wonderful thing. Chore wheels, chore charts, even implementing some kind of a system like you said you had with middle school, where these are worth X amount of points. And once we get to these points, it doesn't have to be a reward such as, food or toys or treats. It could just be, we'll get to play an extra family game together one night, or something else that is value of time, especially since time is such a commodity in our world today. And showing them that when they help and contribute to the household, you'll have more time to spend with them, I think is a very powerful message.
I do too. That's what
we try to work on in our house. And then I know at our school, what we do is we have a chore chart and the children rotate. So in a smaller family, you might have three things that go back and forth, but it really just depends on how people want to set it up. But yeah, definitely including them, letting them help you. Also remembering that when children are starting with these things, it can feel really large and overwhelming. So going back to that control of error, it doesn't have to be, they need to do it all themselves. If you have a bunch of towels you need to fold or carry up, they could start with just the washcloths while you're doing the larger ones. They can just carry up this pile. And then just like anything else, the more they do it, the stronger their muscle at that ability will get, and they can do more of it.
Yes. I also think having the tools needed be more their size. So getting a broom that is smaller, even if that broom maybe, you know, doesn't sweep as well as a big broom would, but offering them their size tools to do some of the chores, I think is very helpful in them enjoying it.
Definitely. And you can also get the handheld broom and dustpan. Mm-hmm. Dustpans usually aren't their size when you're dealing, even if they have a broom that they can stand up and do, that's their size. Smaller dustpans are helpful. Depending on, obviously, with the dishwasher, if you have a dishwasher, they could load the bottom half, maybe not the top. They can't reach that. We have a table set up at our house that's a child table where they can take and do things if they're doing food prep or anything, so it's not high. Choppers. The Montessori Services is a wonderful resource to get child-sized tools.
Great.
Or they also have gardening tools. They have little rakes that are their size. They can help with outdoor chores. And they have these wonderful wavy choppers, which you can also get on Amazon. But they're tools where the children can hold up on top of it. And then they can chop even hard vegetables like carrots and cucumbers and different things like that. They make child-sized peelers. They have child-sized dish scrubbers, so they can start hand-washing dishes with you. Yeah, Montessori was really big on part of the problem of their day was you can't expect a child to do things with adult size things. You need to have a kid size that works for them.
Yes. And so I think as nannies, we can, you know, say to the parents, I think that this is important. And a lot of parents really want that help with finding resources, or you can give them some child-sized tools as birthday gifts or holiday gifts, as your contribution. I always look for things that I would like in the house to be gifts, because I think that that's a very good way, because if we can use them together, then the gift is even extra special, because we get to play with them together. So yeah. And so if parents or nannies are listening to this and they want to learn more, where can they go to find out more about Montessori or other ways that they can incorporate this or look for Montessori schools or any of that good stuff?
Oh, there are so many resources out there. AMS.org and AMI.org have articles and information. They also show different schools that are affiliated with them around the country. MACTE.org, MACTE.org also shows any training centers that people are looking for more information that are approved by them. There are websites like Montessori Services that specialize in a lot of those child size things. And you can get anything. You can get woodworking. We have children that do hammering, nails, and sawing and drilling. You can get those things child size as well.
That's great.
If you wanted to do more work with classifications, Montessori Print Shop has an amazing wealth of both free and paid materials. Even the paid ones are a couple dollars because they're all downloadable that you can print and laminate. Montessori for Everyone also has a wealth of free and paid for Montessori materials. And then there are tons of articles and blogs as well.
Great.
Even training centers that don't necessarily have MACTE accreditation still have interesting articles and podcasts. It just wouldn't be what I would use for judging the teacher's skills. But they all have good information. It's been 100 years. There's a lot of things out there that are wonderful. Just keep exploring for it. There's also, I think it's Montessori Materials that... if you type in free Montessori lessons, there are a lot of people that have put different lessons on there that talk about the areas of practical life, sensorial, math, and language, and give you ideas how to work in those facets as well.
That's lovely. Yeah, and I think the most important thing is, if this is kind of more of a new concept to you, is just keep that curiosity alive and going and exploring and seeing what works for your nanny family or your family and sticking with it long enough to see if it works. But then if it doesn't work for your family, you know, you can move on to a different strategy and try that for a while. So I think that curiosity is really a good place to work from.
Definitely. And one of the main tenets of Montessori as well is just the idea of stirring up excitement and then stepping away. Mm-hmm. So just trying to even start with asking a child questions, or what do you think about this? Or how does this work? And showing them ways to delve further into whatever they're interested in. You're outside and they're walking and they are attracted to a twig. asking them anything about it. Like if you see a little bud on it, oh, did you notice this? And then seeing what else they notice or talk to you about. Yeah. Oh, that's rough. That's smooth. Giving them the context that they can then take that and then touch something else and say, this is rough or this is smooth. And those are some of the basic principles as well. Just teaching them categorization and classification of the world around them.
Yes. Yes. And they can, you know, do it with their toys too, inside of, you know, if they want to sort all of their stuffed animals into different categories or things like that.
Yeah. Really, and they like children, especially the younger ones, twos, threes, when they have a strong sense of order, you can just, if you can watch, they might line all of their toy cars up just in one straight row and then move them a few feet and then do it again. one of the big things is if you see a child doing that, don't interrupt them. Let them go. That is their deconcentration. And as long as when everything's said and done, if they start to walk away and their concentration is broke, then, oh, I see we left our cars out. Mm-hmm. Let's go clean that up. But trying to catch them in the moment when they're not in focus.
Right. Yes. Well, I think that is it for right now. Although I know that, you know, there are books and books and books. We could fill a library. Or talk for 24 hours straight about this and probably never run out of things. But I feel very good about that overview. Is there anything else that you wanted to add or touch on?
I would just say that if you're using these techniques and you're helping children to come up with their own words and their own minds, be prepared for that to come back at you. One of the things our parents love, and as much to their chagrin, are when they're speaking to their children and the child says, but that's my choice.
Mm-hmm.
Or if my husband will go to hug my girls and she was concentrating and he broke it, she'll say, Daddy, this is my body.
Yes.
They're going to set those limits on you too. And it's all going to come back around, which is wonderful, but it's also hard to sometimes deal with that. Like, yes, I understand that's your choice, but right now we need to get in the car. So right. You can buckle your seatbelt or I will buckle your seatbelt.
Yes.
Hopefully most of the time we're not quite down to that level. It's, do you want to buckle the top or the bottom? Because you don't want it to be, you do it or I'll do it for you. But sometimes you have to. And that's the, I think that's important. Don't beat yourself up. There's always going to be something that we could do better or we could do differently. And all we can do is take a deep breath and analyze it and try again another time.
Yes. That's very good advice. Because yeah, we all make mistakes. and things are going to go differently than you plan them, no matter how well you plan them.
Right. So,
yeah, that in the moment improvisation is crucial, and it doesn't always go the way that you think it's going to go. So
sometimes that is a really beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. You do amazing studies on, oh, you want to know how long this dinosaur was? My daughter's really into dinosaurs right now.
Uh-huh.
Let's take a tape measure and we will go and measure it out. Or sometimes it might be, yes, I know that the T-Rex doesn't eat vegetables and they only eat meat. Humans are omnivores and trying to work some of those things out.
Yes.
It's always a bit fun. Just a sense of humor.
I love it. I love it. Well, wonderful. Well, we end each episode with a cute or funny story, and I have one that I've been dying to share. So I went away from my nanny babies for a week, and I was at the International Nanny Association Conference in New Orleans, and it was amazing. If you're curious about the International Nanny Association, there's a couple different episodes that talk about it. I highly recommend it, but I also had tacked on, vacation. So I was away for a full week. And so when I got back, my youngest nanny baby, she had just turned a year old. She leapt into my arms. She like reached for me and wanted to be close to me. And then she put her face up, like, so we were cheek to cheek basically, and just smelled me. And then I had the biggest smile on her face and I cried. It was so beautiful. It was like she missed my smell. and it just was a really wonderful reminder of how important our jobs are. that we are very important to these kids, and they're important to us too. So I wanted to share that because it really, after being around amazing nannies that inspired me, and I got so many new techniques from the INA, and then to come home and just have a kid really appreciate being around me.
That's beautiful.
It was really affirming. So I wanted to share that because it really has stuck with me, and I think that will be a thing that I remember forever, hopefully.
Not every day you get smelled.
I know. I was like, I'm glad I showered so that I don't smell like plain. But yeah, it was so sweet, and the big smile on her face afterwards. And then she wanted to go hang out with her buddy because I'm in a nanny share, so they also didn't really see each other very much. Mm-hmm. And so then the two little buddies wanted to hang out too, and it was really lovely to see that. So
one of the really things that I always try to keep in mind, Maya Angelou had a long quote, but at the end of it, it ends with, they may not remember what you taught them, mm-hmm. but they will remember how you made them feel.
Yes.
And I always try to keep that in mind because children are so wonderful and I just want them all to feel love and happiness as much as possible.
Me too. I love that. Well, thank you so much, Tiffany. This was wonderful.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Obviously, I love talking about Montessori.
Yes, and I love learning. So this was a match made in heaven. and thank you all for listening. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Chronicles of Nania is produced and hosted by Martha Reddick. Artwork by Noni Amadon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nania and on Twitter at Nania Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnania@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This show has been brought to you by Machine Culture.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.